fighting for America.
The 12-member jury decided not to press charges against Officer Darren Wilson.
Stop assassinating black people!
Town hall smashed up. Police cars on fire.
You need to stop throwing objects at the police.
One of the tear gas canisters on the street. Dispersing right now.
Fighting for Idaho.
This is 5 million people being given amnesty that Congress rejected, that the American people have rejected.
Fighting for you.
It's just such a great time of year to really be grateful for what we have and to celebrate what we've accomplished over the year and also to do things for others.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the Morning. Thank you all for joining us on this wet Tuesday morning. We're joined now by our friend Nagmaid Abedini. Nagmaid, good morning.
Good morning, Kevin.
And as we take a look at the holiday season and your travels and certainly your advocacy to make sure that your husband returns home, how have you been?
It's been difficult. This is the third Thanksgiving and the third Christmas coming up, actually, without sight. So this season is always joyful, but it's always very difficult for the kids and I.
I can only imagine. What has been the latest as far as your husband and his possible release and the negotiations going on with the Iranian government, ma'am?
It's been quite frustrating. I had hopes that we would not, as Senator Risch had mentioned before, we would not release another cent to Iran before they release Saeed, who they're holding illegally. And we've extended the talks, the nuclear talks, to July 1st, and Iran gets $23 million a day during these extensions, $700 million a month. And we never asked for Saeed to be part of the nuclear negotiations, but we have said, you know, our government should push for his release. And if Iran wants to, build trust and show good faith, then this is the best way for them to do it. And they haven't done anything to show build trust. And yet we continue to release funds to them.
Well, what do we not get as Americans as far as the culture in Iran?
What do you mean? The Iranians or the government?
I think the government, because we keep trying to negotiate and we hear that our government wants a deal in spite of the fact that you have the government there that is getting nuclear stuff from other countries, that has no problem calling this government names. It's almost as if that we're there's a great disconnect because we continue to try and get relations with these folks, and they continue to break all the rules that we put into place or that we agree on.
That's my take on it as well. And I think it would have to take a lot to trust Iran, and for Iran is the one who has to really take a lot of steps to build trust, and it seems like we are the ones for taking a lot of steps to build trust with Iran, whereas it should be the other way around. It should be Iran releasing the Americans it's holding, and it should be Iran that continually shows that it is, in any different things, but with the nuclear, it's not moving towards, it is for peaceful reasons, but everything has shown on the contrary. And again, Iran, the nuclear aside, Iran's violation of human rights and continues to worsen, and the UN continues to address that. But we continue to work with Iran and talk with them without mentioning that they're holding actually Saeed and another reporter. And they're violating human rights issues. And we just seem to try so hard to build trust with Iran, and Iran's just receiving funds. And as you mentioned, their intention is not peaceful, but they just continue to hold the Americans hostage. And we continue to just not work towards their release, including my husband, and it's quite frustrating.
And we take a look at your husband. How is he holding up, ma'am?
It's hard. He hasn't had a visitor for the last month. His mom had to leave the country because she was under pressure as a Christian who had converted from Islam. And so it's Christmas season. He doesn't have any visitors. I know the last time he had visitors, his mom was visiting him. It was very emotional for him. As you might imagine, just being in that horrible prison, it starts having effects on psychologically, emotionally, and physically. So his health has been deteriorating. He's been there 2.5 years, over 2 years now, and so I'm hoping. I know his faith is keeping him strong, but he's the only Christian in his cell in that ward. He's the only convert, and of course he's a target, and he's an American. So those are all the things that are making him a target with, you know, fellow cell members, and it's making it difficult for him.
580 KIDO, Nagmeet Abedini with us, Kevin Miller in the morning. Now, Nagmeet, if people want to keep in touch with you, how can they do this? What's the best way, on Facebook?
You know, I've been a single mom, so I haven't been very good with social media, but I've tried to be good with Facebook and try to give as much updates as I can on Facebook, and I also have my Twitter, and I do have an Instagram, so I don't know what social medias people use, but my Facebook has been the most, the one I've focused on the most, and Twitter as well.
How are you holding up, and what have you been doing as far as raising awareness? I know you travel quite a bit, and, you know, the buzz of the interview happens, but then, you know, you have the wear and tear of the travel, the wear and tear emotionally, and these are words for us, but you live it. Can you take us inside your world, ma'am?
You know, after the two-year mark of Saeed being in prison, I felt the word for me was endurance, because I really wanted to just stop, and felt that a lot of my efforts were not getting anywhere. But I have been traveling. I just got back from my last travel was D.C. and Dearborn. It was a great trip, especially in Dearborn area. And I will be in a few days. I will be going to Orlando, Gainesville area. And before Christmas, I have a couple more trips. But, you know, I continue to just push forward to bring awareness on Saeed's plight and his imprisonment. And I will continue to push our government. You know, I just can't imagine just not doing anything while Saeed is wasting away in that prison. So I will continue to push forward. It's hard. At times I feel exhausted and tired. And again, as a single mom, it's hard to juggle both. But I've been pushing forward and enduring and like a race, I think. So I continue to travel and speak out and meet. I just got back from D.C. meeting with some of our congressmen and seeing what can be done to get our government to act and to bring Saeed home.
Nagmeet, what would it mean to you and your family if your husband is returned, when he is returned?
It's been so long for the kids and I. It's been a dream. It's especially for the kids. The 2 years seems so long. My mother-in-law had to flee Iran, and as soon as she got into a, you know, safe because got out of the country, she called my daughter and she said, "What I want? I'm going to be home. I'm going to be with you guys for Christmas. What do you want me to bring?" And my daughter said, "Daddy." And that's all we think about. I just can't even imagine right now. I haven't seen my husband in almost over 2.5 years. He left in June of 2012, so I can't even imagine having him back in the family. It would be, as my daughter would say, it would be the best Christmas present, but I am willing to take any time of the year to get him back.
Sure, indeed. At 580 KIDO, Nagmeet Abedini with us as we continue on. Who have been some of the people that have helped you the most, both nationally and locally? You've mentioned Senator Risch. Who else is in Saeed's corner, in your corner?
You know, Senator Risch, Crapo has also been helpful, Labrador and locally. Senator Cruz has been amazing nationally. He's been, I would say, one of the most supportive. But, you know, a lot of the senators and congressmen, Senator Rand Paul has also been vocal and has, I've met with him, and he's been very supportive. Frank Wolf and Chris, Congressman Frank Wolf and Chris Smith, they've been champions on human rights issues. Mark Meadows from North Carolina, from all over the country, I've had congressmen and senators just being advocates for SAID. So it's great, especially this time going to D.C. and seeing so much support and seeing that there is a lot of congressmen and senators that are trying to do what they can to bring SAID home.
What do you make of the purpose of detaining your husband? Why do you think they're doing that?
You know, we don't want him to be a pawn, but I do think they are holding him as a pawn, or they have an American, so they see what they can get from that. I don't understand. It's not just, you know, there's a lot of countries that have spoken out about Saeed's situation and his imprisonment. It doesn't make sense for them to continue holding him. Actually, more people have known about Jesus because of his imprisonment than if they would have released him both inside Iran and both outside. And so if their goal was to silence Saeed because of his Christian faith, they've failed on that one. I can't understand both sides. I don't understand Iran unless they're holding him as a negotiating as a pawn, and I don't understand our government even releasing anything to Iran and talking with them before they release Saeed. So I don't know. I can't understand politics too much, but it's definitely not because he's broken any law. You know, as we mentioned before, UN and the EU, the European Parliament, all have, and many different countries have released statements and a resolution saying that Saeed, Iran's breaking its own laws and international laws by holding Saeed. So it's definitely not something he's done. They don't like him, the convert, and you know, that's a big part of it as well. But I don't know why they, if they want his message to be silenced by keeping Saeed, they're actually spreading Christianity.
More coming up with Nagma Dabbadini next. Kevin Miller in the morning. Let's get you to work safely and on time. You're listening.
Back weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
I have urged that you do something about getting Pastor Abedini and the other two Americans released. Do me a favor. Do America a favor. Do the Abedini family a favor. Tell them next time you're not going to give them any more money unless they kept these three people loose. You're talking about billions of dollars, and you're talking about three people that we really, really need out of prisons in Iran.
There you have it, our own Senator Risch taking up the plight of brave Americans being held illegally by the Iranian government. Joining us, Nagma Dabbadini, who, of course, is advocating for their release along with her husband, Pastor Saeed. Nagma, when we take a look at the Iranian theocracy, is there any way that when you're traveling or when you're in the supermarket here in the Treasure Valley that you can explain to folks their line of thinking? Because Idaho, we're blessed where we have a lot of friendly people in comparison to the rest of the country. But America compared to the theocracy in Iran, can we understand their thinking?
I think it's really complicated. Iran has a president, but there is a supreme leader that actually controls everything. And even when Ahmadinejad was president, now Iran has a more moderate president. It doesn't matter. The supreme leader is really the one who's directing the country. And it doesn't matter if the presidents are changed. It's the same thing. So it's really the supreme leader who's a hardliner, who in here in America we can shake hands and and trust, but actually over in the Middle East and Iran, white lies are okay. Lying and deceiving is actually okay. It's part of, it's actually, it's allowed by Allah. It's allowed by Islam in order to protect yourself, in order to further your cause. So it's really, you really don't know, you know, you can't really trust what they say, because a lot of times it's really, they are allowed to, and they do say white lies or deceive based on their agenda. And it's just a different culture. It's not just, it's not as easy as sitting across the table from them and coming to an agreement and shaking hands. It's really complicated. It's a very radical government, and it hasn't changed because Rouhani has become president. The supreme leader has been there for decades, and he's radical. He's made statements against America, against Israel, against, you know, all of that. And that's the person we're meeting with, Iranian foreign minister and the president of Iran. But really, the supreme leader is the one we should be reaching. And he's the hardliner behind all these presidents.
Yeah, that's the thing that gets me here at 580KIDO, that we're negotiating with those folks. But religiously, what is their point of view? I mean, most people, when they hear this, they think that the folks in Iran, you either convert or you die. Is that what their whole point in this?
Yes, they do. Just like the other countries in that region, Iran also does not like converts. Does not like Muslims converting to Christianity, and also they don't like Christians and other minorities, religious minorities in their countries. And they're not as extreme right now. They're trying to dissociate themselves from ISIS, so they're not as extreme as ISIS, cutting off heads and forcing people to convert, even though that was in the history of Iran hundreds of years ago, where people actually, Iran, before it was a Muslim country, was somewhat Christian. And that's how Islam came into Iran by force, and convert or die. But now they're not as they're trying to dissociate themselves from ISIS, so they're not forcing and killing people to convert to Islam. There isn't very many people left that are not Muslim, and the ones that are Christian or other religions are in prison. So there isn't really any other religion in Iran other than Shiite Muslim.
580KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning here, Nagmaid Abedini with us. Do people have trouble comprehending that, Nagmaid, when you talk to them, because we're so used to reasoning with people?
It is, and that's a complication. You can't just reason, and Middle East is a complicated region. Iran's a complicated country, so I think it's just not easy sitting with them and trying to reason and come to agreements. You have to understand the mentality. It is very anti-America. It is very anti-Israel. That will never change. That has never changed. And you have to realize they are allowed to lie and deceive as part of their belief system. And I don't know. It is complicated working with them. And unfortunately, it's, you know, we are. Speaking with Iran for the first time in over 30 years, and still Saeed continues to suffer in their worst prisons because he's a Christian, and it's been over 800 days. It's been a long time. The kids and I haven't seen him for 2.5 years since he left in June, and it's frustrating. It's frustrating knowing what Iran, knowing Iran's mentality. They don't really try to hide it. The supreme leader has made statements that they, you know, we know why they're trying to, you know, what their intentions are with the nuclear. They've made statements against, you know, again, America and Israel and different things. And so their intentions are really, it's easy to see. But what I don't understand is why we're, as Senator Risch mentioned, why are we even giving them anything. When they haven't stepped into any trust-building steps, you know, North Korea recently released Kenneth Bay and others, I think, toward trying to build trust with America for future talks. Well, Iran's talking, but they haven't. Iran hasn't done that. Iran has continues to hold. They haven't released even one American during these talks. They haven't showed any sign of trust. But we still continue to work with them. And we're the ones that are trying so hard to build trust where it should be them.
I mean, what about your faith in Christ and your husband's faith?
You know, I talk about my frustrations and with, you know, with things that are happening. But in the end, when I'm frustrated or I'm worn or, you know, a lot of mornings I deal with just wake up and I think, wow, this is my life. My husband's still gone. He's suffering. How is he doing? Wondering how he's doing. And most mornings I wake up and I wake up with worry. But really my faith, when I go to that, to the person of Jesus, when I go to God's presence, I have so much peace and so much, I get so much strength. And that's what I, you know, when I was in Dearborn, I was able to share that with, you know, some Muslims. And religion can't give you that. Religion can't give you the peace that you can't pretend to have peace. You can't pretend to have strength when your whole world has crumbled. You just crumble with it. And religion can't give you the do's and don'ts of religion can't hold you up. It has to be a real relationship. And that's been my biggest blessing in the last two and a half years. I've discovered Christ in a deeper way. It's not just an idea. It's not just, oh, Christmas. It's about the story. It's the reality. If we realize as Christians how real Jesus is, our life would be radical. Radical love is what, you know, it was just our life would be transformed in the way we live our life. And that's what I've discovered in the last 2.5 years, found this deeper intimacy with Christ and the reality of who Jesus is. And that's been a beautiful gift in my life. And that's what has kept me going in this 2.5 years is that relationship, that no religion can give you the peace, the strength, the joy in the worst time of your life. And you can just walk through the storm. And it only comes through a relationship and through Jesus Christ, through accepting Jesus Christ and him coming to earth to pay for our sins so that we can be reconciled with God.
Nagmaid, we'll talk to you in a couple weeks. We appreciate your time. I know it's not easy, ma'am.
Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate your friendship and support. God bless.
God bless. Bye-bye. It's our friend Nagmaid Abedini. Please keep her husband and all those detained in Iran and other places, our fellow Americans, in your thoughts and prayers. Please let them know that we don't forget them and that they'll be returned home soon. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Dave Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Out to Fox News is Evan Brown, Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO, with an interesting race going on in Louisiana. Evan, good morning.
Good morning.
And here we thought the election was over.
Not quite. It will be, though, however, on Saturday evening, we think. So we are still waiting to decide one Senate seat from the state of Louisiana. That is the seat of incumbent Democratic Senator Mary Landrieu, who has had to go to a runoff race with her Republican challenger, a congressman by the name of Bill Cassidy.
Any thoughts on how this looks for Landrieu, who has been a staple from Louisiana for quite some time?
Well, she's been in the Senate for 18 years. That's three terms. And it is certainly telling that she did not win outright this past election day, where she had to have a runoff. She basically just edged up on Bill Cassidy. Cassidy, I believe, had a slight lead over her, according to some numbers, just at around the 41-42% mark. But a third candidate, another Republican, the Tea Party-backed Republican by the name of Rob Maness, had taken in, I think, close to 14% of the vote. And so when we combine that with that of Mr. Cassidy, it does look like he would be in the lead in this runoff because it's only Cassidy and Senator Landrieu. That doesn't necessarily mean it's a foregone conclusion because both sides still need to have the people who voted, you know, on Election Day come back out and vote again for the runoff. But it did put Republicans in a very high high lookout point. So what we know so far is that it still could be anybody's race. We have to see how turnout goes on Saturday night in Louisiana.
Has this race become a national race?
Not so much. You know, it was considered to be one because, it's before Election Day because of the balance of power issues in the Senate that they thought that perhaps maybe this race could be something that decided the balance of power. But with the Republican tidal wave, the control of the Senate has already been, decided. And so with that, this is about Mary Landrieu more than anything and whether or not she'll have a fourth term or whether or not Louisianans believe that she is really there for their best interests and if they want to give her another shot at it.
And Evan, we saw this during the primary, or not the primary, but the general, where we actually had a vote on Keystone going back and forth, and that had a big impact for both candidates.
Well, that vote on Keystone happened after Election Day, and when it was realized that Republicans would probably try to put the issue forward anyway. Landrieu is the chair currently of the Senate Energy Committee, and while she's been a proponent of the Keystone Pipeline, some of her detractors have said that she's really put that to the side in order to please President Obama and other Democrats. She had argued that her experience and leadership in the Senate would be a reason to reelect her, and by trying to whip up votes for the Keystone Pipeline after Election Day, that did not work in her favor. The vote failed, and so we'll have to see if that has any ripple effects come Saturday.
Evan, does it really matter considering the Republicans have the lead in the Senate?
Well, it matters to Louisianans. They have to, every state gets two senators, and one of them's up for re-election. So, it certainly matters to them. Is it going to affect the Republican majority? No, not at this point.
Right.
What it would mean for Democrats is it would be one more of their longstanding stalwarts, experienced senators either staying in office or yet another one of them being kicked out.
Evan, great points as always. Thank you, sir.
You got it.
Evan Brown joining us, Fox News Radio. Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO.
Are not only found in Ferguson. The issues raised in Missouri are not unique to that state or to that small city. We are dealing with concerns that are truly national in scope and that threaten the entire nation. In the coming days, I will announce updated justice.
There we have it. You know, I'm sitting here taking a look at this, and I'm thinking to myself, do we have a racial problem in America? Now we have the Attorney General coming out and saying that they're going to take a look at rewriting rules involving police officers. We're going to take a look at making sure that the police officers are on the same page, and the differences between the police officers and the African-American community. The president saying this as well. Now, there's a story that has been talked about, that we've talked about, that that's uncomfortable to really discuss here. But when you look at the statistics involving people who are arrested and people who are not arrested, it doesn't bode well for people in the quote-unquote black or African-American community. That's not a condemning folks, and not to be divisive. You know, in other parts of the country, it works to be divisive. It works to say, well, all these folks of this, that, and the other. I don't believe in that. I believe that in Idaho, in America, we should welcome everyone. We should do everything that we could and can to help others. But on the other hand, you can't ignore the truth. You can't ignore when we're taking a look at the sheer statistics that Eric Holder continues to ignore from Fox News. Police killings of blacks down 70% in the last 50 years. In 2012, 123 blacks were killed by police with a gun. In 2012, 326 whites were killed by police with a gun. That's from the Center on Juvenile Criminal Justice / CDC from Fox News. Okay? Those are the statistics. And you take a look at the folks that are incarcerated, and the President of the United States, in his intelligence, saying that we need to focus in on the disconnect between the police and the people of color community. Well, what's the disconnect? Who's committing the crimes? I mean, let's face it. At 580-5436, 580-KIDO, if the police tell you to do something, don't you do it?
Police officers have the right to come home. And if they're in dangerous circumstances, we have to be able to put ourselves in their shoes and recognize that they do have a tough job.
They do, and the administration is making it tougher.
I'm going to be proposing some new community policing initiatives that will significantly expand funding and training for local law enforcement, including up to 50,000 additional body-worn cameras for law enforcement agencies.
Okay, here's the skinny on this. And again, Dave Burnett sent this to me yesterday. It's making the rounds of the internet today. You have one witness who exonerated Officer Wilson that has been killed, that was in protective custody. That's not being reported. But we can convene this Ferguson Commission. And on one hand, we have the president talking out of both sides of his mouth, because here's one of his counselors on race relations.
You won the first round, Mr. Prosecutor. But don't cut your gloves off, because the fight's not over. Justice will come to Ferguson.
Justice will come to Ferguson. And then you have our crime-fighting attorney general, and every time we mention the soon-to-be former attorney general, we have to say this.
We need to do this every day of the week and just really brainwash people into thinking about guns in a vastly different way.
Right. We need to brainwash people about folks. I don't get this. So the local folks have said Officer Wilson did the right thing. You have Sharpton, Big Mouth Sharpton, yapping about that it ain't over. You've got the Brown family saying they're going to sue. And then you have this.
It's apparent that our nation's journey is not yet over. And so we return once more to this hallowed place to seek shelter from a terrible storm, a storm that I'm certain that we will weather so long as we continue to stand united and unafraid to address realities too long ignored.
There we have it. So he's going to look into this. Remember, it was Eric Holder's Justice Department that brought in the community activists to stir up the problems with Trayvon Martin and stir up the problems in Ferguson. Is that justice? Is that peace? 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Much more on the Ferguson fallout. Plus, Ray and Janae Rice, are they helping or seriously hurting the issue of domestic violence in America? 650 at 580-KIDO. Let's get you to work.
Good morning to you, Kevin.
Good morning, Kevin. Hey, good morning, Kevin.
Yes, good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, world. It's a brand new day.
Earning your trust every morning. Kevin Miller, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award. 580-KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
While federal civil rights law imposes an extremely high legal burden in these cases, we have resisted prejudging the evidence or forming premature conclusions. And as these investigations proceed, I want to assure the American people that they will continue to be conducted thoroughly and in a timely manner, following the facts and the law wherever they may lead.
There we have it. Eric Holder saying that he hasn't prejudged the evidence. Really, Mr. Holder, we don't believe you. Really, Mr. Holder, we don't believe you. You did prejudge the evidence. As that town in Missouri was burning, you're urging your colleagues at the Department of Justice, telling them to investigate the police who keep us safe. And by the way, let me just share this with you at 580KIDO. From the FBI, in 2013, blacks committed 5,375 murders. In 2013, whites committed 4,396 murders. Whites are 63% of the population. Blacks are 13%. From the FBI, courtesy of the O'Reilly Factor. To Dan in Meridian with Kevin Miller at 580KIDO. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. I think we're all missing the picture on this whole thing. You can see this administration is going to try to do whatever it takes to stay in power. I think he's going to usher in martial law if he can get enough of this, dissent going on within, the cities, militarize the police, and, he'll be there for quite some time. I'm really shocked at how the media is handling this. Every morning they're just showing constantly flaming the fires, and then you got these agitators out there that continue to, I don't know how they exist. That's the thing that is mind-boggling. The Sharptown and the Reverend Jackson, these two are knuckleheads, are constantly on the news, but that's my take on it. We're gonna see a lot more of this, and it'll probably end up in martial law.
All right, you heard it here first. Dan, thank you for the call. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580KIDO. Good morning. 6:59, Kevin Miller in the morning, 580KIDO. Fox News is next. Stay tuned. Stay informed.